At Delta, we know Mike in 8C prefers reality TV to reality. So we provide more than 1,000 hours of in-flight entertainment. On the next flight, 8C is Mandy, a foodie. So we offer all types of food options. Because at Delta, everyone flies their own way. Delta, keep climbing.
Guys, welcome back to the Kind of Funny Games cast. As always, I'm Tim Geddes, joined by one of the coolest dudes, one of the happiest dudes ever, Greg Miller.
We won, everybody. Snyder
Cut's coming. Why are you happy, Greg?
Snyder Cut's coming, everybody. Justice League, 4 hours, maybe six episodes. Going to be fucking dope. Fuck you, Tim, for all the shit you talked. Suck it, Kevin. Suck it, everybody in the world.
The shit will still be talked. This doesn't change any of that.
We'll see how you feel excited after 4 hours of the Justice League cut.
I hope that they do the miniseries thing. I think that is the best possible outcome for this. Yeah. Give us more. Let's just fuck it. 10 hours. Why not?
I hope they milk it to death, man. They're giving them $20 million to finish this movie. Finish the movie, do a documentary, tell everything, have a fucking a Madden Strader where he's circling everything into the Whedon cut that he didn't do and doesn't want. Let's go.
It's funny, man. I was looking at Justice League and I was really trying to think about it. I was like, what was wrong with the movie? Uh-huh, like, what do they need to fix? Oh, more money. That's what we need to do. Let's give them more money. Exactly. That should fix everything. We have the former Imran Khan.
I like the idea of taking things that aren't well liked and giving them just different directors to give them, like, give Taika Waititi Game of Thrones season 8. Let him redo it.
Can you imagine? Can you fucking imagine? I would die. Blessing. Adio, Junior, the new face of video games. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Released the Hideo Kojima cut of Metal Gear Solid 5, of course.
There you go. Perfect. Let's go.
Of course.
You'll get available with Konami Plus coming soon.
It just has more of him in every scene.
The Kind of Funny Games cast every week right here on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. We get together, talk about video games, all the things that we love about them. You can watch the show live with us if you are a Patreon supporter over on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. You also get the show ad-free. You also get the exclusive post show. So many goodies for you out there. If you don't want to do that, that's cool. You can watch it later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames or roosterteeth.com. If you want to listen to us, that's cool. You can search for Kind of Funny Games cast on your favorite podcast service. And guess what? We'll be there too. We like to give you so many options. And speaking of so many things, there are so many Patreon producers today. Yeah, killing it with the segues. Muhammad, Al Tribesman, James Hastings, Sancho West Gaming, Agent Cody Banks, Trent Barry, Julian the Gluten-Free Gamer, Joseph O. Youssef, and Scott Radloff. All of you are gentlemen. All of you are scholars. We appreciate you all very, very, very much. But you guys, I want to know what you've been playing, what you've been going on. Imran, I want to start with you. I'm seeing you on Twitter talking some shit about our boy, Spider-Man.
I love Spider-Man. I love Spider-Man the game. I think Spider-Man the DLC is a real big misstep in a whole bunch of ways. So I have this stress ball, and I use this when I'm like recording or whatever, so I have something to fiddle with. I broke it playing Spider-Man. It is now deflated, and like air is coming out of it because that... Spider-Man, the game, has a very good difficulty. It ramps up in complexity without getting too hard, as like Sable Agents are just like more things to keep track of, but not necessarily like that much bigger on HP or damage. Spider-Man, the DLC, does the complete opposite, and like here are just a bunch of fucking guys that take like a ton of damage, have zero wind up on everything, and are just impossible to kill prioritize in a way you would do in an Arkham game. It's that, and it's the fact that I just don't think it's very well designed from really any perspective. Like, the missions aren't fun. Like, the only thing good about the DLC is the stuff that was good about Spider-Man, traveling around the city, the actual core battle system. All that stuff is still intact. It's just, this feels like things that were... Oh, my stress ball's leaking beads. This feels like things that were...
Are you stressed out to be on the show right now?
This feels like things that were rejected for the actual main game and then just not put in there. It's like, oh, we got to put a DLC, so let's just use these old ideas.
Interesting. I really enjoyed it. What you were saying there about the things that you loved about the Spider-Man game, you love about this. I agree with what you said there, adding on story and character. I feel like the kind of overarching plot that the DLC added, I thought was really interesting and didn't feel like cut content. It did feel kind of like a side story that gave me enough of a great beginning and great end that I enjoyed. The middle was not good and got a little bit kind of messy. But your point about the actual combat itself, I completely agree with, where it is, it's just kind of like dialed up to 15, it feels like, and of just more. Everything's more. They're all flying now. They have stronger guns now. They're all just there. And it, you can't, no matter how good you are at playing through the game, it feels like a battle that should be over in 45 seconds takes 5 minutes.
Yes.
Just because of how much they, how many waves there are and how much they just keep throwing shit at you. And, it, and that type of padding, I feel, was very out of place for what the Spider-Man combat kind of exceeds at.
It feels like it was a thing that they should have called Challenge Pack 2 or whatever. And not like, but they put a story around it and they made it a second part of a DLC arc. So it's this thing of, oh, I need to get through this to finish this game, but it also kind of sucks to play this part. And also, Hammerhead feels like a villain that they didn't want to waste for Spider-Man 2. Like, they didn't want to use a good villain for this DLC. So they brought in Hammerhead, who by the time he shows up in the third DLC as like a fucking robot is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Because it's just a robot body and him is the head. It's like, oh no, you guys didn't design this well at all.
Now you stole Spider-Man.
That is hilarious. What else have you been playing?
It's mostly been that, honestly. I'm trying to get through my backlog and figure out what's next. And then I look at it, it's like, oh, everything I've put aside has been like a massive open world game. Mm. So it's like, okay, well, I can do this, and but I also have Arkham Knight and Horizon and a bunch of other stuff. Like, there are games that I want to get through, but I don't want to do the exact same kind of game over and over. So I think I started XCOM 2, and I gave that, or all I did was get my customized characters in. So right now it is just people from my Animal Crossing village, or like animals from my Animal Crossing village as people. But I will probably dive deeper into that once Spider-Man is done. But for right now, that's kind of my main focus.
Are you trying to platinum Spider-Man?
Yeah, I figure at this point it's more inertia. The fact that I've had the platinum on the original, so I want to keep the platinum on the DLC as well. So I think I finished everything that's going to be annoying. Now it's just the main missions left. That's
good. Okay, now you get to reward yourself. Have some fun.
I got the Spider-Verse suit. That's all I care about.
Hell yeah. Greg.
Yeah, buddy.
What have you been playing?
So I've had an interesting week. Of course, we had done the Ghost of Tsushima reacts, right? Today's only Wednesday, so a week at tomorrow we did it for that. And it got us all talking about how it looks so much like Assassin's Creed, which then put Valhalla back on my mind, which then just put Assassin's Creed back on my mind. So I popped on to Odyssey. I was like, I never finished Legacy of First Blade, the DLC, you know, first one. Let's jump in and do that. Thought I had a whole bunch to do, actually ended up, I was one mission away from the end of episode 3 of Legacy of the First Blade. So I did that and rolled the credits there. And I was like, well, this is a good stopping point. I want more Assassin's Creed. I never really gave Origins a chance, Bayek's whole story. When it first came out, I popped it in when we were talking about Game of the Year stuff. And the first hour didn't grab me and I just walked away. And then, of course, fell in love with Odyssey and put 100 plus hours on that game. So I was like, let's do that. I feel like that. And let's do that. I downloaded that. I downloaded all the DLC, started that up. I would say probably played a lot of it. And it was that thing, a lot of it being like 5 hours. I'm talking about, in a week or whatever. I played a healthy chunk of it. I finally made it to his wife, got on Cleopatra's court, got the gist of like, I'm the, magi of Egypt, fully, not just my town anymore. And enjoyed it and was playing it. But the thing I found, Tim, was that no matter what I did in that game, I kept having that nagging feeling of like, why am I not doing this in Odyssey? Like, why am I not in that world? I love Cassandra so much. I've invested so much time in that character. You know, playing Origins, I missed having choices, even though they're just dialogue choices, right? So they barely change anything. But having the ability to guide the character a bit more, I thought the combat, so similar. I didn't feel like enemies were as aggressive as they were in Odyssey, and I didn't bother tweaking, difficulties. I'm sure that could have changed something for me too. Overall, though, it was just this thing of I started getting into the rhythm of Origins, and again, having a great time. It's a good game. It's Assassin's Creed. It's so similar to Odyssey, but it was that thing of like, all right, cool. I'm running here and I'm checking this off. Also, Odyssey had introduced the exploration mode, where rather than just put the icon on the map, it would do the whole thing of like, well, it's in this region and it's north of this camp. And it's, you'd have to actually do a little bit of searching, nothing dramatic. Origins didn't have that. So it was back to, very much like, go here, do this, go here, do this. And I was just running through that, checklist of, why I love a Ubisoft game, an open world Ubisoft game. And I think it was Saturday night or Sunday morning. I just couldn't resist the call anymore. And I fucking went back into Odyssey and put in another, I don't even know. I played it. It's been outside of Predator last night. It's all I played. So I probably put another 10 hours up on Odyssey already of just running through. And like, I was like, okay, I didn't do the Fate of Atlantis DLC, which is the second, their second expansion. Major expansion. And when I had been talking about it on Games Daily, where I didn't know if I wanted to do it, I'd seen people in the chat say it was good. So I was like, I'll start that. And so I started that and I was playing it and I got to the end of the mission where it's like, all right, cool. You've done all the things. The door to Atlantis is going to open. And then like there's a scuffle about, because you're in modern day stuff now, a scuffle about with your cohorts. And they're like, okay, cool. Like this, we need to take care of this thing. So can you wait a little bit longer to open the door? And your character's like, oh yeah, it's waited this long, it can wait longer. And it popped the trophy. And I was like, okay. So that's the end of episode one of Fate of Atlantis. Like, what's going on? And then I went to try to find the mission and I couldn't. And then I went in the DLC and I was like, wait, none of Fate of Atlantis is installed. What I thought was episode one of Fate of Atlantis was really just the bridge between a Legacy of the First Blade and what was setting up. So like, if I would have played it in real time, you would have beaten the Legacy of the First Blade, done this mission, and then waited for Fate of Atlantis, like, motherfucker. So I downloaded all those episodes, started into Fate of Atlantis, like for real, in a brand new area, in a brand new map, running around Elysium, sinking points, doing this, hanging out with Hermes. And it's like, fucking dude, like this game, I was telling Blessing about it. Like, I have like, depending on how much you want to put into it, and I know that for some people, this is the problem with Odyssey, that it's like the everlasting gobstopper. There's like just so much content to it. Like, I can easily see putting in like another 30, 50 hours on this, of doing this DLC and then cleaning up all the side missions and running through all the additional feats and quests and stuff that are out there for just trophies. In the similar, vein to Imran with Spider-Man right now, as we're all in this spot right now where we have time to work on backlogs. Like, I platinumed Odyssey, obviously, but now I have that thing where it's like, whatever, 67% right now is my total trophies, right? Even though I have the platinum, because there's all this DLC stuff I didn't do, and it's a time investment. But I fucking love being in that world, and I love how beautiful it is, and I love Cassandra, and it's so crazy to me that as soon as I jump back into Origins, like, oh, I see it more of like, even combat, right? I remember when I first started Origins at launch and being like, what's this new combat system? I don't really get it. Then playing Odyssey, coming back to it, and be like, oh, this is where all this started. It got refined for Odyssey or changed, playing in Origins is just like it, and it is great. Don't get me wrong, but it's just that weird thing of like, knowing there's more to do in Odyssey, I can't commit myself to Origins because I've already come so far and made a narrative in that game.
So you're the entire time that these games have been out, you've been super on Odyssey and like, yeah, kind of whatever about Origins. With Valhalla coming, obviously we don't know too much about it yet.
Sure.
But do you think that it has potential to exceed Odyssey to you?
I mean, I don't know. We haven't seen enough of it, right? I love the setting. I love the setting looks different. I think that's the, for me, such a big part of it, where I would say, before either of these games, I didn't have a special affinity for ancient Egypt or ancient Greece, right? But something about Odyssey's world, and me and Kevin have talked both privately and on shows about it, speaks to me way more than Origins world. And even playing through Origins world again and, running across deserts and stuff like that, like, it was that this is cool, but I like how Odyssey looks. Odyssey always looks like a beautiful, lush painting to me. And it's because, Greece, and it's, the green fields, the way they play with sunlight and mountains and shadows and water. Looking at Valhalla, and granted, from the gameplay trailer in quotes, I think that England looks like it's going to be dramatically different. I think that all the characters are going to be dramatically different. That cinematic trailer they showed it with, of the way the English think about the Vikings and the way the Vikings are actually, in what they showed, of course, like, in it for the right reasons of family and community and all that jazz, that gets me. Like, I like the idea of what they pitched of, building your Viking town and doing all these things, like bringing a few of those things that I loved about Assassin's Creed 2 into it here, combining it with hopefully, the RPG stuff we liked of Origins and bringing that in here. I think all that works for me, and I think I'm going to really dig it. But it's even with Origins, it's not that I don't dig it. I think how I am, and I think a lot of gamers are, but you need to be in a mood for a game. And I think when Origins hit, I wasn't there. I didn't, for some whatever reason, by hook or crook, I didn't want to jump into the Ubisoft checklist what's going on game. Whereas when Odyssey hit, I did want that, and I did want the RPG like mechanics, right? And the ability to change your outfit and do all these different things and change it piece by piece and have armor sets and all that stuff. What that looks like in Valhalla remains to be seen for the most part. So I feel like since it's going to be the continuation of it, and by that point, knock on wood, I will finally I'll be off the drug that is Assassin's Creed Odyssey and have kicked it out of my system. Hopefully I'll be able to give myself fully to it.
There you go. I've been replaying Last of Us to prep for Last of Us 2 coming out. And I'm not too far. I just met up with Bill. But it is such a crazy experience for me because I played it when it first came out. Then I played it when it came out on for the remastered, but I haven't played through since. And like that's been long. I mean, at what point? That was like 5 years ago, something like that. Yep. Like that's a long time for this game that we all know so well. Kind of going back to it, especially in this time, I feel like I'm having such a weird, unique experience with it where it feels so much more real and intense. And this is added level where I'm playing on the theater screen. So it's 120 inches of the game. And the camera work where it's so close to Joel, like at all times, and just the way the motion blur works, it like really makes me nauseous. And it's not good. like I can't play for like extended periods at a time without like really not feeling well. But I feel like that's mixed with just kind of how dark and eerie the game is and how much it talks about quarantine zones and like all this like real shit that like I'm just like, oh my god, this is like so fucking real right now. But like all of that together kind of is adding to the experience a lot for me, where it's like it's making me feel a dread that I didn't know I could experience when I already know what's happening, you know, from mm-hmm. playing through this game. And god damn, the first hour is just, it just grabs you. Like, I want to replay it again with Gia and Cool Greg, and I just so they can see just the intro. But I won't talk too much about it. We already know about The Last of Us, and we have a lot of Last of Us content coming up soon. But I definitely recommend giving it another shot, like going back in and playing to prep for two.
I feel that game benefits a lot by turning off listen mode. And I know some people just, it's too stressful without it, but just as a stealth game, not knowing what's around the next corner is actually really, it really works well for the theming of that game.
Interesting. Maybe I'll try that.
I also recently started Last of Us. I streamed like the first, I want to say like hour and a half of it last night, doing a similar thing, trying to prepare for Last of Us Part 2. And with that, I've also like taken a break from Persona 5 Royal. So I can like,
oh, what a surprise. I mean, the best game of all time. Just nobody can fucking play it in a reasonable amount of time. Weird.
I'm just saying, 60 hours in, you know, you just got to take a break. You can't have too much of a good thing at once, you know?
Gerard, the completionist, just put up his completionist video of Persona 5. And I don't even think it's Royal. I think it's just Persona 5.
Yeah. And I think it's been like hundreds of hours.
500 hours.
Holy shit.
Yeah, man.
Outrageous.
It's crazy. But yeah, like Last of Us, replaying it now, because I'm in the same boat as Tim, where I played it originally when it came out. I played the remastered version, I think a year or maybe a year and a half later, and I haven't played it since then. And so going back to it as a game that, you know, came out at the end of the PS3 era in 2013, playing it in 2020 has been an interesting thing, because in my mind, that game has always felt like, you know, it's always felt like the most polished game of all time, right? It's always felt like the most like well-paced game of all time. And like in 2013 for me, I think it hit those standards. But now going back to it about 7 years later, I'm starting to see places where I'm like, oh yeah, this is a PS3 game, right? That's the game is still beautiful.
The PS3-ish of elements of it really blowing my mind, and but it excites me though. I'm just like, I can't wait for the PS4.
Oh my god, yeah,
that's been my big takeaway so far, is that, you know, going back to it, there are moments where the game absolutely like looks beautiful and still ages amazingly, and even especially in cutscenes, where I remember watching one cutscene where it's Ellie and Joel, and they're in an apartment at night and they're looking outside and it's raining, and I remember being like, yo, this rain looks incredible. Like, dude, in 2020 like,
it's fantastic.
And with HDR, I'm like, man, this game looks great in a lot of places. But then there are quite a few places where I'm like, oh yeah, like once you jump out of cutscenes, like you can see the difference between cutscene and actual gameplay. Like actual gameplay does look PS3-ish, right? Looks like a very amazing, very technically advanced PS3 game, but it still looks like a PS3 game. And then in the ways that Naughty Dog is good at animation and camera work and presentation and like framing shots and all these different things, like the game still holds up so well. But yeah, like as I've been playing it, I've been like, dude, I can't wait to see what Last of Us Part 2 is. Because if you imagine that the jump between Uncharted 2 and Uncharted 3 going into Uncharted 4, like if you imagine you're gonna have that similar level of like, oh yeah, Uncharted 4 definitely took things up a notch when you look at it graphically and in presentation and how it runs and all this stuff. If you apply that to The Last of Us, dude, this like Last of Us Part 2 is gonna be incredible.
Which I'm really excited about. Anything else?
I also been playing this game Hunt Down, which I actually played specifically for a segment on PS I Love You, where we pick a game from the PSN drop and just like a random non-AAA game, and we play it and report back the next week.
I just
Hunt Down, you just installed it?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude,
it looks great. It looks like a like Neo Arcade Contra kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's exactly that. It's like a Contra-ish, Metal Slug-ish, like 2D, retro-style, 16-bit shooting game. Really cool, has a fantastic style. And usually, like, for games that we play for PSLW for our ranking segment, like, I usually don't return to them. I usually don't, like, talk about them past that segment.
On to the next one, right?
Yeah, usually it's on to the next one. But for Hunt Down, like, Hunt Down is a game that I've actually been thinking of in the context of, like, yeah, this might be one of my favorite games I've played this year, right? Like, it might be, like, my top 20 so far as, like, games I've played. Like, it's really, like, stuck with me.
Dude,
as far as, like,
how awesome. Okay, yeah, I'm gonna send Assets a link to bring up the trailer here.
You want to listen to the trailer because it actually has like pretty funny narration.
Yeah, like the narration is good, and that narration, like the tone of the narration, carries through through the game itself, because there are hilarious voice lines in the game. The game looks great, right? It's 16-bit style, but they do a good job of making the game feel like there's so much going on and it's vibrant. This is the trailer that Kevin's pulling up right here.
It kind of struck me.
Let's listen to it too for like at least 30 seconds.
You gotta give me a minute to set that all
up. All good. What are you about to say?
Blessing as like remind me of Super Time Force, at least in like tone. Is that correct? Or
I didn't play too much Super Time Force, but in terms of, because I remember Super Time Force being what, like pretty like light in terms of its tone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like it has it definitely goes for a more comedic vibe with what's going on. Like basically the setup is you're a bounty hunter, and in each of the levels you're going through one by one and taking out each of your bounties who are the leaders of these different gangs. And so you'll go into one level and it's like a gang focused on a specific thing, right? Like, and it's very the Warriors in like the setups of the gang. So like say you are going after a gang that is the Warriors. You like go in, you do a quick level, like the levels are surprisingly short, but I think that works to its benefit. You get to the end of the level and then you fight the boss of that gang. And with all that, right, like that's kind of where it stops as far as like it being serious. And like from then on, everything is pretty light and funny in terms of the voice lines, in terms of the style of the game, in terms of everything that's going on. It's really cool.
All right, I'm ready to rock and roll.
Let's do it.
Da, 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 da.
And I've not heard of it before.
Enter a future where crime rules the streets. When the citizens are in trouble, they call the authorities. When the authorities are in trouble, they call the bounty hunters.
Showtime! This is awesome.
Yeah.
Anaconda. She knows the meaning of life. That's why she can take it away so easily.
And there's a cover story. That looks pretty good.
Her jacket size is 38. Special. And her favorite smell is fear. John Sawyer. Cyborg. He's been a man since he was a boy.
Enjoy your flight.
Oh my God.
Everything he owns is made out of metal.
Oh, reliable.
His blood type spells AK-47.
Okay, Kev, we can go here.
Yeah, so like that is the same tone and vibe you're getting as you're playing the game. Like it keeps that awesome. level of comedy. And yeah, like I almost forgot to mention, like there's a cover-based system, which I feel like you don't really get in 2D shooters, but it works pretty well as far as you approach like a box that's in the way and you like duck under it, or like there's an opening of like a garage door or something, so you can duck in order to dodge bullets. It's a really cool, really awesome game that honestly I recommend anybody check out, especially if you're into like this style of arcade classic shooting game.
Are you playing it solo or co-op?
I'm playing it solo. Okay. I'm not positive if it has online co-op.
I'm not sure either, now that I said that out loud, but I feel like at some point in the trailer they mentioned co-op, and I was like, huh, I wonder if that's like online.
Yeah. There's definitely two-player co-op, but I can't remember if it's online or not. But yeah, I didn't play it co-op because I didn't have anybody to play it with co-op.
It's on every system, PS4, Switch, everywhere. Xbox One, Mac, PC. Cool shit, man.
Worth pointing out, you say, you know, you never heard of Coffee Stain. This goes back to Games Daily Today with me and Imran. Coffee Stain, one of the many, 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 many Embracer Group owned game studios now, formerly THQ Nordic.
Oh, that's really cool.
They're part of the Justice League, Avengers, whatever the hell you want to call the 118 games that got over there.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want to get to the topic of the show, but before we do that, let me tell you about our sponsors. Ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you that this episode is brought to you by Honey. We all shop online a lot, some of us more than others. And in this house, trust me, Joey, Gia, they have problems. But did you know you can make online shopping even better? You can with Honey. Honey is the free online shopping tool that saves you money online. It automatically finds the best promo codes and applies them to your cart, which makes online shopping finally feel as easy as it's supposed to. Here's the thing. This works on pretty much any website. There are like hundreds of stores that you can get, actually over 30,000 stores online, whether it's like Target's or, you know, something like Best Buy, all the way down to things like Papa John's they're talking about here. It automatically just finds the best codes for you, applies the coupons, and you're saving money. I've been using this for years. Kevin's been using it for years. Kevin, what did you save money on recently using Honey?
Hold on. I just bought stuff. Oh, where was it?
I keep talking about some of the Hue lights I got. I got 20% off.
Ooh, Home Depot. I bought something from Home Depot and it pinged. It was like 15% off.
There we go. And it's that easy, man. All you got to do is install it in your browser and it does the work for you. Not using Honey is literally passing up free money. It's free to use, installs in just a few seconds. Plus, it's backed by PayPal, so you know that it's reliable. You can get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/kinda. That's joinhoney.com/kinda. You guys really just do this. It's free. It's easy. It's going to save you money. Joinhoney.com/kinda. Next up, I want to tell you about ExpressVPN. We all know that ExpressVPN protects your privacy and security online, but there's something you might not know. You can also use ExpressVPN to unlock movies and shows that are only available in other countries. Now, many of us are stuck at home. We're running out of things to watch on Netflix. With ExpressVPN, you can trick your internet into thinking you're somewhere else and access the libraries of other Netflixes, of other Hulus, of other YouTubes, whatever video service it is, you can do this. ExpressVPN hides your IP address and lets you control where you want sites to think that you're located. You can choose from almost 100 different countries, so just think about all the Netflix libraries that you can go through. I keep talking about this show, The Last Dance. Andy got me hooked on it. It's the Michael Jordan documentary. It's amazing, but it's not available on Netflix where I am. So you can use this to access it in other places. ExpressVPN is so ridiculously fast. There's never any buffering or lag. You can stream in HD, no problem. If you visit the link right now at expressvpn.com/kindoffunny, you can get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. You can support the show, watch what you want, and protect yourself with ExpressVPN at expressvpn.com/kindoffunny. So now, guys, I wanted to do this topic for a very long time. What is the best year in video game history? I wanted to keep this kind of open and kind of just more of a discussion. I have a notepad out that I'm going to kind of like start putting some things down in case we need to rile this all together. But off the top of your head, what comes to mind? Let's go around. Bless.
2017. Easy. Like that's the easy answer for me. And like part of that is because I think 2017 speaks to me personally as far as video games go. Like a lot of my favorite games of all time came out in 2017. Like you look at Breath of the Wild, Persona 5, Hellblade came out in 2017. And then even like looking beyond that, right? Like Mario Odyssey, Horizon Zero Dawn, Nier Automata, Destiny 2, Wolfenstein, The New Colossus. Like I feel like as far as the amount of games and the amount of not just great, but amazing games that came out in 2017, I feel like trumps all other years. And then you also look at the console launch of the Switch, right? Which was a huge thing for that year. I think all things considered, you look at 2017, and for me, it's hard to really put up a year that goes well against it.
Mm-hmm. And left off the ace in the hole, man, for 2017, Friday the 13th. Come on, bless.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Fortnite, where you at? Come on.
Oh, Cuphead.
So 1998, actually probably verifiably the best gear of gaming. Let me just run down some of 1998's games for you. Ocarina of Time, Tekken 3, Half-Life, Metal Gear Solid, Grim Fandango, Resident Evil 2, Street Fighter Alpha 3, Panzer Dragoon Saga, Banjo-Kazooie, let's see, Xenogears.
Pokemon Red and Blue.
Was it 98?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Wario Land 2.
NWO Revenge.
F-Zero X, Unreal came out that year, Turok 2, 1080 Snowboarding, NFL Blitz. It is actually probably, like, in terms of Metacritic scores, actually probably the best gaming year.
I mean, it's insane. Like, mm-hmm. the 98 and 2017 are definitely the two that come to mind immediately for me. Greg, what about
you? Buddy. Well, of course, you know, when we did this, I was like, this sounds familiar. And sure as shit, in 2017, I did a video for GameStop TV saying that 2017 was the best year in gaming. But sadly, it was then superseded by 2018, ladies and gentlemen. Red Dead Redemption 2, God of War, Monster Hunter World, Spider-Man, Smash Brothers, Assassin's Creed Odyssey, Celeste, Into the Breach, Octopath Traveler, Tetris Effect, Detroit, Return of the Obra Dinn, Pokemon Let's Go, Astro Bot, Fallout 76, JK, Florence, Dead Cells, Moss, Gree, Minute, Valkyria Chronicles 4, and The Messenger. Come the fuck on.
It's insane, man. Like, so these three are I was like doing some Googling trying to see what other people's lists had, and they come up a lot. There are, though, a couple others that are some standouts. I actually want to read some of our Patreon responses here to kind of set the tone. So here we go. This comes from Jacob Meyer. He says, the best year in gaming is undoubtedly 1987. Hmm. Wait, come back. No, I'm not Jared Petty in disguise, but really, my neighbor Ben looks a lot like him. Let me explain. This is what I call the Nick Scarpino method of ranking. 1987 was the year of beginnings for nearly every game franchise we love today. Contra, Double Dragon, Street Fighter, Metal Gear, Legend of Zelda, Punch-Out, Castlevania 2. It's not the first one, but indulge me. Mega Man, Maniac Mansion, Final Fantasy, Phantasy Star, Sid Meier's Pirates, just to name a few. The only real big name we're missing was Mario. And honestly, that would just be too much. It's interesting. I do not subscribe to the Nick Scarpino way of thinking, where just because it's the first doesn't really give it that extra boost.
Yeah, nobody goes back to Street Fighter 1 at this point.
Yeah, but yeah, that is still a banger list of games.
I do think that is like an interesting argument. I think the interesting thing about this conversation is the fact that, like, I'll hear any argument for any year aside from like 2014. Because wait, 2014 was the year that like Dragon Age Inquisition won Game of the Year for.
Yeah,
for,
I remember that was a weird year because like Bayonetta 2 came out and like nobody really acknowledged that for Game of the Year. Then yeah, it was like, oh, it's Dragon Age: Shadow of Mordor. I'm like,
yeah. Which, but Shadow of Mordor, amazing game. I absolutely love Shadow of Mordor. But like, when that's like the bar for like, oh yeah, this is Game of the Year, I feel like then yeah, like it's hard to really say that was a great year.
Secret best game of that year was actually Mario Kart 8.
I'm going to read you the Wikipedia 2014 in video games. Among video games originally released in 2014, critics gave the highest reviews to Smash Brothers for Wii U, Dark Souls 2, Bayonetta 2, Shovel Knight, Velocity 2X, Dragon Age Inquisition, Mario Kart 8, Hearthstone. Other significant games were Destiny, Middle Earth, Shadow of Mordor, and Monument Valley.
So yeah, like kind of a year. But like that aside, right? Like I'm willing to like hear the argument for what was it, 1983?
No, that one, it was 1987.
1987. I'm willing to hear the argument that 1987 was the year where a lot of things got started. Like I think, you know, in the ways that we look in the ways that we look at the way people talk about, you know, what makes a year great to them. Like I think that's very valid. I think also another year I want to point out, I'm sure somebody in there has written this too, but 2004 was a very huge year. If you talk about video games, right? Like that's GTA San Andreas, Burnout 3 Takedown. I believe Half-Life 2 was that year. I think Shadow of Colossus was that year. Metal Gear Solid 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That year is wow. It's San Andreas. It's Half-Life 2. It's Halo 2. It's Doom 3. It's Fable. Sims 2. Metal Gear Solid 3. KOTOR 2. Jack 3. Thug 2. Metroid Prime 2. Spider-Man 2. Come on now. Katamari. Oh, City of Heroes. Prince of Persia. Warrior Within. Far Cry. Unreal Tournament. Oh, hold on. No, hold on. That's where I skipped over. I put it in column view. That I think fucked me. No, that's right. Far Cry, Unreal Tournament 2004, Chronicles of Riddick, Escape from Butcher Bay, Counter-Strike Source, Ninja Gaiden, Metal Gear Solid, The Twin Snakes, Zelda, Four Swords Adventure.
Very, very solid year.
If RE4 had managed to make its December release date in America, then it would be 2004 with a bullet. But that slipping like 1 month is like, if only.
Andrew, the alarming emu, doubles up on the 2018 all the games that Greg said, But something that I think Greg missed, I think, was Shadow of the Colossus remake.
Oh, I did.
Yeah. And The Messenger, which were both that year as well.
I had Messenger on there. I had Messenger on there.
Yeah.
Shadow of the Colossus remake, I freaking love, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, the more I think about that game, the more I'm like, man, I got to go back and play it again. Because, like, I the original Shadow of the Colossus is one of my favorite games of all time. I played the original, like, probably two or three times all the way through, and then the remake I played. And I feel like I kind of rushed through it just because that's kind of how I play games nowadays, right? Like, I get a new game and I immediately just sit down and just blow through it.
Devour it, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I devour it, right? And that's like, what, like, if you know what you're doing, maybe like a 5-6 hour game. And so I think I played Shadow of Colossus in one or two sittings, and I haven't played it since then. And the more I feel like that kind of left me with not a sour taste, but like that was Shadow of the Colossus, you know, kind of thing.
On to the next thing.
Yeah, like on to the next one. And I didn't really sit. I didn't really take the time to really appreciate it as much as I appreciate the original games. But the more I've kind of had time away from it, the more I've kind of thought back to it, and the more I've kind of heard people who have gone back to it play it and appreciate Shadow of Colossus for the first time through that game, it's made me want to revisit it again, because that is a game that, for me, Shadow of Colossus, right? You look at games and you talk about games as, like, you know, amazing stories or works of art or whatever you want to do. And I think Shadow of Colossus is like the shining example for me of, like, yeah, this game, especially when it came out in 2004, was a game that came out and it did things different, and it pointed to a different direction in which you can take a game and have people kind of digest the game. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, and as far as great games in 2018, I feel like Shadow of Colossus doesn't get mentioned enough as far as that.
It's a weird one, too. Even when it was revealed, it felt so out of place and shocking. Like, I remember when we were doing the reactions to the E3 conference, and, you know, Sony had been having just banger conference after banger conference year after year, like with Year of Dreams. Like, that's kind of like the origin story of all that stuff. And then all of a sudden, it's just after Last Guardian had came out, or at least we had known it was coming out around there. I can't remember the timeline exactly, but it's just like the trailer came up and it's like, this is Shadow of the Claw? Like, what the fuck are they doing? And it was like, oh, it's a remake? Like, it just felt so unexpected. Like, I would have never predicted that Bluepoint would make Shadow of the Colossus remake.
Yeah, it was such a weird thing to process as it was happening, because I remember that was when PlayStation was still doing the theater experiences for E3, and I was in the theater for that.
Oh,
and
shit.
I remember, yeah, dude, and I remember I remember, like, the trailer coming up and me being like, huh, this game looks cool. And then it was the bridge. Like, when they showed the bridge, that was the thing that made me go, like, y'all, this is Shadow of Colossus. And legit, I was the only person in the theater that was excited. But I was excited to the point where I was like, let's go. Like, I was, like, tolerant in the theater and nobody else was with me. And I was like, I guess I'm the only person to hype about this. But yeah, as it was happening, it was one of those things where I was like, really? Like, y'all did this? All right, that's wild, but let's go. Like, yeah, let's do this.
So I haven't played that remake yet, and I feel like my issue with graphical remakes is we're on the verge of the PS5, so now it's like, okay, well, it's a graphical remake, but it's from the end of the current gen hardware, so I kind of wish they just would have waited a couple of years to put it on the PS5, but then at that point, like, why not wait a couple of years to put on PS6? So
it's a weird thing, like, talking about graphical remakes. And I've been thinking about this a lot because Tony Hawk's Pro Skater coming out, where when it is just here's the core game, it feels exactly the same, but we're just going to make it look better. No matter what, it's going to look different. And an example of that is like the Crash Bandicoot games when they remade them. I love it. They look beautiful. I love how the remakes look. But they lost this, like, dark shadow. They lost this, like, the art style of it. And seeing Tony Hawk, it's like comparing the look of Warehouse to how Warehouse looks in the new version. Obviously it's beautiful and it looks great, but it's just there's lighting. Like, lighting alone changes the feel of it, you know, where it's just like, it used to be such a dark, dingy warehouse. Now it looks like a building with windows that sun's coming through. And like, it's, I'm just kind of making an observation. There's not really a point here. It's just like, it is weird to
say quoi. I mean, like, that's a real thing. Like, there's a feel to a game, and when, especially a classic game, right? Something that we all know so well, to get it again and have it be, hey, we made it look better, we do these things, like, it can then either show the seams, show how empty an environment is, change the color, change the feel, and then it's always just going to be a shadow of itself. No pun.
Yeah, Shadow of the Colossus, actually, like, they change Wanderer's face a little bit, and for some people that's like actually a breaking point of they're not going to play the remake because the face is a little different, even though you never see it.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean,
with Shadow Colossus, that's like with Shadow Colossus, that's actually like a big thing, right? Because I feel like for that game on PS2 when it originally came out, it was such a visual game. Like a big part of that game was how it looked, how big the world felt, despite it, you know, being empty and not being actually that big when you look at the grand scope of things. But then also like the scope of the Colossi and how big they feel compared to how small you are. And so in the remake, like, you know, for a game where you are redoing all the assets and you are basically changing the way that everything looks, you still have to figure out a way to maintain all the same feels that you had playing the original with the look of it. And that is, I mean, no pun intended, but like that's a giant task, right? Like that's a colossal task to take on. And I think for the most part, like they nailed it. For the most part, they figured it out. Like, you know, I was still impressed playing Shadow of the Colossus remake and still feeling like the Colossi were larger than life. They maintained that feeling of how big the Colossi felt. Granted, in some moments, I felt like the world didn't feel as big because we've gotten so many other big open world games within the last couple of generations that it's hard to really maintain that feeling of scope when you're making a one-for-one remake of the original. But yeah, to what I think all you guys are saying, right? Like it's going to be different, but then yeah, like it's kind of a difficult thing to take on.
Yeah, it's funny because I feel like with the face stuff aside and all those little things, and I also Shadow Colossus I love, but I don't have this. It's not like near and dear to my heart like Tony Hawk or Crash. But Shadow of the Colossus remake, I feel nailed what I'm talking about the color palette. And I feel like they nailed the feel of it where it's like I was okay with it because the art style, while changed, still felt the same because it was still in the same kind of realm of just different types of colors. And like the grass felt right. You know, the mountains felt totally right when you see them.
For sure.
Alex Brown writes in and says, "Hey guys, I saw this week's Gamescast is about the best year in gaming history, and I want to know what you guys think when you look back on 2008. For me, it's my favorite year of gaming. We had Call of Duty World at War, which was my first online gaming experience, and GTA 4, which is one of my favorite games of all time. As well as that, we had so many other great games that year, including Fallout 3, Spore, Left 4 Dead, Metal Gear Solid 4, Dead Space, Mirror's Edge, Far Cry 2, Brawl, Smash Brothers Brawl, Mario Kart Wii, and Saints Row 2. And there's
that's
more.
A special year.
And Ninja Fable Gaiden 2.
Gears 2. Little Big Planet. Yep. Star Wars Force Unleashed. Midnight Club Los Angeles. DMC 4. Burnout Paradise. Battlefield Bad Company. When looking back at that list, man, I can't think of another year which was as packed as that with awesome games.
Weirdly, they're forgetting, I think, like one of the bigger hitters was Persona 4. It was like a late PS2 game, but it was a huge game in that like it set the Persona series up for success in America.
You're also forgetting Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe, everybody. So it's not
that's it happened.
I mean, so that, right?
Yeah.
Dude, something that's really impressing me actually is like reading through this and having this discussion is like, cool, we all kind of have the obvious, the 2004, 1998, 2017 conversations, but it's like there's been a lot of years with just arguments.
I want to make an argument for 2016, which I think gets overlooked as far as being an incredible year, right? Like, let me turn to my other tab because I switched it off. But 2016 was the year we got Overwatch, Uncharted 4, A Thieves' End, Dark Souls 3, Inside, Dishonored 2, Final Fantasy 15, The Witness, Titanfall 2, Firewatch, Doom 2016, right? Like, those are like big generation defining games, some of those. And like for me, I think 2016 might stand behind 2017 is like my favorite year of the gen, right? Like I didn't even mention like Last Guardian, which could be hit or miss depending on who you are, and quite a few other games, Deus Ex, Mankind Divided, Hitman, the original, the reboot. yeah, like quite a few great games come out in 2016.
We got Mikkel writing in, bringing up 2010. Mass Effect 2, Red Dead Redemption, and Undead Nightmare, Fallout New Vegas, Mario Galaxy 2, Limbo, StarCraft 2, Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, Halo Reach, Bioshock 2, Dante's Inferno, Super Meat Boy, Enslaved, Vanquish, Alan Wake, God of War 3, Call of Duty Black Ops, Heavy Rain. It's interesting. Like this to me, like that's a great year, but it's not the best year. And I wonder why I'm feeling that. And I think when we look at what makes 2017 and 1998 special is the fact that, and even 2018 to an extent.
Goddamn right. Show some fucking respect, Tim.
It's that they're not just sequels. It's like kind of, or even if they are sequels, it's not just like derivative. Like we expect that type of sequel. It is a Breath of the Wild type game or a God of War type game. Like,
I feel like the games that came out in 98 and 2017 especially are games that have either have impact, as we can say about 1998, or we can foresee to have impact as I would say about the games 2017, right? Like The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. Like I could see ways in which that game is going to continue to influence open world games. PUBG, right? Like that was the game that really broke out as far as Battle Royale and what Battle Royale would be. And I believe Fortnite came out in 2017 also, but then it got
Battle Royale came out in 2017. I think end of the year Battle Royale came out.
Yes, end of the year we got Battle Royale, but Battle Royale didn't really pick up until 2018. But yeah, like, you know, and the other Hellblade, right, is a game that I think was innovative. Cuphead was a game that came out and had an impact and had people rally around it because the game felt so special and so different and so cool. Nier Automata, I feel like a lot of people make the argument that game had such a unique and one-of-a-kind story, and it tackled its themes in a way that felt one-of-a-kind to that game. Like, there's so many games that came out in 2017 that I feel like you can attribute to, like, the start of something new. Horizon Zero Dawn, you know, also like the start of something new.
Taking that and this whole conversation and kind of having a tangent for a second, do you guys think that there's even a chance that PlayStation will ever have a better 2 years than 17 and 18? Because I just feel like that's magic in a bottle, right?
2001 was really good for them. Do you remember that? Have you seen that image of like, here's 2001 in for the PlayStation? It's like Devil May Cry, GTA 3, FF10. Like,
yeah. Solid 2. God damn. Yeah, that's pretty freaking good. But I just feel like over 24 months, like they had some ridiculous games.
2017 was Horizon Zero Dawn, Uncharted The Lost Legacy, Persona 5, Nier Automata, just for PlayStation. Mm-hmm. And I guess Resident Evil 7, if you count VR for that. And I think Hellblade was also exclusive for PlayStation at first. And then, yeah, in 2018, that is when you got Shadow Colossus, God of War, Spider-Man.
Lessing, I like you a lot. You are missing a very crucial part of 2017, which is Yakuza 0.
Fair. And there was like a run of Yakuza games, right, from 2017 to 2018.
Once Zero became successful, they were like, oh, yeah, let's bring everything over as much as we can. Yeah.
To your point, Tim, I mean, it's possible. It's going to be really hard. And some of that, I mean, you look at that and you wonder about, well, delays, was this always the plan? How did that shake out? But you figure with the stable first parties they already have and then them getting their games out in this way, you'd imagine that heading into PlayStation 5, right? Maybe the chips fall that way again. Maybe you do see, you know, Santa Monica and Bend and, you know, what, maybe a second Naughty Dog team or whatever start delivering in a cadence, right, where it is all in a stream. Because, I mean, you figure... Here it all played out well for them, I think, in terms of pacing and everything. Mm-hmm. And then you look at this year with delays and shit, right? Where Last of Us is on top of Ghost of Tsushima, which is on top of PlayStation 5. Like, I'm sure that's not how they wanted this to actually shake out.
Yeah. William Ramos says, what's up, Gamescast crew? To me, the best year in gaming is undeniably 2007. Some of the biggest ever released that year, and a lot of gaming and most beloved franchises made their debut. We got Mario Galaxy, Halo 3, the most anticipated game ever up to that point. BioShock, Modern Warfare 4, which was the birth of the Call of Duty juggernaut, Uncharted, Portal, and of course, Mass Effect. To me, the only other years that even come remotely close are 2011 and 2018. Anyway, games are cool. We've had a great run lately. Let's hope this trend continues.
We've had a great run. Like, we're packing it up. We're done, everybody.
We're done.
Well, many games have had a great run, everybody. Let's take 2021 off because of the pandemic.
The orange box was huge.
Yes. The orange box is one of those things, like, when you think about it, like, the value of it makes zero sense. Of why would they put all these things together that are worth, on their own, they probably could have gone for $60. I understand, like, there would have been an uphill battle, but Portal is one of the most influential FPSs out there in terms of, like, it made it, FPS mean something other than, like, a World War II shooter. And Team Fortress 2 is a fun, foundational multiplayer FPS.
Yeah.
Like, it's a huge thing.
Like, Team Fortress led to Overwatch in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
Dig deeper in 2007, and maybe some of these got said and I missed them, Tim. I apologize. But Puzzle Quest debuted, Final Fantasy Tactics, which one was that? War of the Lions, yeah. Skate, Warhawk, Peggle.
Warhawk.
Peggle, baby. Do you think we'll ever get a Peggle 3?
Mm. Yeah, probably. Right?
That's why I want it so fucking bad, you guys. Or I'll even take Peggle 2. On mobile.
It's weird, yeah. Like, I now that I think about it, it's weird that Peggle did not become a big mobile hit because it feels like it was really poised to. It was in there early, it just EA did not capitalize.
Fucked it all up, man.
What a surprise from you.
What a surprise. Let's see here. Crisis, so this is actually some fantastic insight and research that Billy the Door did. Hey, guys, I got carried away. Here's a link to a spreadsheet with the top 50 games as rated by Metacritic from 2000 to 2019. I took the average scores to get what everyone on the internet loves, an arbitrary number to sum up an entire year's worth of creativity. Our winner is 2001. Based on the games list, it's tough to disagree. This year had a ton of bangers: Melee, Halo, GTA 3, DMC, Paper Mario, MGS2, Final Fantasy X. God damn, 2001. Oh, shit. And our loser, to no surprise to anyone, is 2014. So there you go, Bless. Yeah. You know, it's more arbitrary than Metascores, user reviews. 2003 takes it with Wind Waker, KOTOR, and the best Mario Kart, which, of course, is Double Dash. Something interesting I noticed, it seems like there is a pattern of the year after console release, 2006 and 2014, the numbers take a noticeable dip, perhaps due to the lower number of games released. But I think that also says something about console life cycles. I know it's not perfect at all, but I had a fun time plugging away on the true game of the century, Microsoft Excel. Thank you, Billy the Door, for this. So that's interesting. So 2001, but I guess that, like, the Metacritic and like the way that he did this says one side of the story, but there's also, that's also bringing in a lot of the bad. And when we think of best year in gaming, we're not thinking about the bad. You get what I'm saying?
No. Like, what do you mean bad? Do you mean like disappointing games?
No, but I mean like this would take into consideration if there's a shit ton of bad games out. Mm-hmm. That's going to change the conversation. Oh, yeah. Whereas when we're talking about best year in gaming, we're not mentioning the things that were bad. We're only
talking about the highlights. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. But yeah, I didn't bring up Mass Effect Andromeda in my 2017 conversation.
Let's see.
One, interesting pick.
What's up, Greg?
2001. Interesting pick.
Yeah.
I'll go for it.
I just think it's an interesting one because kind of what we're talking about the sequels and stuff like that. Yeah. I feel like 2001, when we look at those games, that's kind of like the definition of the PS2 era. And I just think that when all said and done, the PS2 era is going to be going down in history as beloved and super nostalgic. Like, there's going to be so much great memories tied to it, but I don't think that those are going to be the games that have that kind of like Ocarina of Time level conversation. Like, I feel like Metal Gear Solid 2, for everything that it was, will never be looked back on the way Metal Gear Solid 1 was.
Sure. No, you're crazy. People people go nuts over Metal Gear Solid 2.
Well, people go nuts over Metal Gear.
I would say, like,
me being one of them.
Like, Metal Gear Solid 2 was definitely that kind of game that was divisive, but I think it has more of a bigger fan base than the original in terms of just people who go looking at games individually.
I agree with you that it has a bigger fan base, and like, that's absolutely true. I think Metal Gear Solid 2 is the most popular Metal Gear Solid, period. But when we're talking about quality, I feel like people have a rose-tinted glasses looking back at the experience and what Metal Gear Solid 1 did, that they don't talk about the bad, whereas Metal Gear Solid 2, there are a lot of people that are like, well, this.
Are we talking about like the year specifically, or are we just talking about like PS2 versus PS1 in terms of the way we look at the games?
I'm talking specifically about 2001, kind of like those games, that lineup of games very much represents the Xbox, GameCube, and PlayStation 2. And while some of them are super iconic, like, I don't know, but GTA 3 is iconic. All those games are iconic, but I don't know that we would necessarily say it's the best year in gaming because of that, right?
I see. Yeah, I see exactly what you're saying. Because for a second, I thought we were talking about, like, you know, iconic games on the PS2 versus, like, iconic games on the previous generation, to where I would have brought up Metal Gear Solid 3 as, like, a game that people, I think, hold up there comparatively to Metal Gear Solid 1.
3 is the best in the series.
Do you say 3 is the best in the series?
Yes, for sure.
You're absolutely right. And Ronnie Ron is the correct one. Metal Gear Solid 3 is the best Metal Gear Solid game, followed by 5. No, not 5. 4.
5 has the best game.
You know what the games are. Shut up.
Followed by any of the Metal Gear Solids. Really, just 3 is the best one.
Just an all in amorphous blob of Metal Gear Solid on that side.
Yeah. Every Metal Gear Solid is unique.
Yeah. That I can stand by that statement and that statement alone.
But I'm with you on 2001, though, Tim, on what your point is.
Yeah, it's a great year, but it's like, how many would you go back and would those be the ones you want to play, especially in those franchises too?
And that's kind of my point, is that they are so iconic, and like, I just feel like even just that generation of games, there's something about how they'll age that I don't think holds up in a way that a lot of the other games we're talking about do. Like, because it's just like there was like a core something about Half-Life that it coming out in 1998 is fine. It's still Half-Life. Whereas like some of these games have just changed so much and evolved so much over time that they're not necessarily like GTA 3 is
but I mean,
one
like,
of the most iconic games of all time, but it's like it's not the gold standard.
We don't talk about Ocarina.
Yeah. It's true for some of them, but I don't say all of them. Like, I don't think you'll find some people who will say Half-Life Alyx is better than Half-Life 2, but I don't think the vast majority of Half-Life fans would say that.
Yeah. William Dixon says, I believe 2017 will go down as the year that helped define the future of gaming. Breath of the Wild is the game that all future open world titles will be compared to. Mario Odyssey did what 64 achieved in 1996 and redefined the 3D platforming genre, and Persona 5 is now the benchmark for all JRPGs. Outside of gameplay, PUBG was the catalyst in the success of the Battle Royale genre. Resident Evil 7 showed the world the possibilities of VR, and the loot box controversy of Battlefront 2 kickstarted a conversation surrounding microtransactions that will persist for quite some time. While the games from 2017 are without a doubt some of the greatest ever made, the influence of that year is something that I believe should be considered when discussing the greatest years in gaming.
I feel like there are some reaches there, but I understand the overall argument.
Honestly, yeah. Like we were talking about Sony's best year, I think 2017 might be Nintendo's best year in a way that they fired on all cylinders at the last 2 years they spent recovering from it. That like yeah. It was Breath of the Wild, Splatoon 2, ARMS, which whatever you think of it, it is a big
new IP
from them. Yeah, Mario Odyssey,
Mario Kart 8 Deluxe.
Yeah,
Mario Rabbids.
There was a ton of stuff.
Once you switch,
yeah,
once you switch too.
but it, like in terms of software they were making or publishing, that was probably their most like the highest output they've had in the last 5-6 years.
Yeah. And God, Mario Odyssey and like, Breath of the Wild.
So, I remember people like they just straight up did not think Odyssey was going to come out. Like there was a threat on Reset Era that was like, why does Nintendo keep lying about Mario Odyssey's release date? Because there was no way that Odyssey and Breath of the Wild would come out the same year. But Nintendo was like, no, fuckers, buy a Switch.
No, motherfucker, doing it.
Yeah, like to the point of the person who wrote in the question, right? Like Mario Odyssey as a game, I don't think will redefine 3D platformers in the way that Mario 64 did, because Mario 64 kind of came out and kind of redefined 3D and games, period.
No game is going to do what Mario 64 did.
Yeah, period. Like I think that at this point it's just kind of impossible to see that kind of revolution again. But I do think Mario Odyssey is arguable. I would hear the argument that Mario Odyssey is the best 3D platform ever made. Like I think that's a valid argument to make.
So that's all the responses we got here. Like there's a ton of people saying 2017. A surprising lack of people bringing up 1998, which I don't know if that just says something about age or
my generation
or what.
Can I give a shout out to 2015? Also, we didn't bring up 2015 at all.
Yeah.
2015 was a fantastic year.
Yeah.
Yep. Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain. Like I remember the argument going into that year of like, oh, what is Game of the Year going to be? And I think it was mid year that Fallout 4 was revealed because it was at that E3. But even leading up to that, right, we're getting The Witcher 3, I think that's when we were like, okay, cool, we know Fallout 4 is coming. Fallout 4 is obviously going to be the game of the year, but then Witcher 3 comes out and everybody's like, fuck, this game's incredible. And then Metal Gear Solid 5 Phantom Pain comes out, and like in the ways that we were talking about games kind of redefining what a genre is going forward, I think Metal Gear Solid 5, you want to talk about stealth games and stealth combined with open world, I don't think there's a game that's done it better than Phantom Pain. And I think like, you know, we haven't really seen games necessarily take direct influence from Phantom Pain yet, but I think you can make the argument that Breath of the Wild has some influence from there, as far as creating big worlds that are totally influenced by systems. And so, yeah, like between those three games, Phantom Pain, Witcher 3, and Fallout 4, but then also throw in there Rocket League and a few others, I think it was a very, very, very good year.
MGS5 was the game that convinced me that, like, oh, it doesn't matter if Kojima doesn't have access to Metal Gear Solid, or like he doesn't write crazy stories, he can still make an incredible playing video game. I was super wrong about that, but I still think in general,
how dare you? Death Stranding is going to be a future classic.
Death Stranding is the opposite of MGS5 in almost every single way.
But also for 2015, Until Dawn, Life is Strange, Undertale, Overwatch. Ori and the Blind Forest, Overwatch
2016. 2016.
Yeah.
Her Story, Mortal Kombat X. Like 2015 had a lot of excellent games.
Yeah. It was Bloodborne DLC was that year as well, right? because Bloodborne was probably early March, and the DLC would have been December, I think. And the DLC is, it's like some of the best DLC out there. Like, From Software, DLC almost never fails to deliver.
Dying Light, Mario Maker, also.
So, to close the episode out here, I want us to come to an answer. At least try our best to come to the answer of what is the best. So, right now, we got 2017, 2018, 1998. Let's start with 2017 versus 2018.
Okay.
I feel like 2017 has the argument of just numbers. Like, I feel like the amount of amazing games that came out in 2017 compared to the amount of amazing games that came out in 2018, I feel like 2017 has a larger number. And
you're fucking grinning as you say it because it's not true. You know it's not true. You're out on a ledge. You haven't counted the games. There's more games than 2018. Period.
It might actually come down to like a cultural preference in a way, because like most of 2017's bangers were Japanese. Most of 2018's were Western.
Hell yeah.
That's a good point. I didn't think about that. That's a very good point, honestly.
Both because, are excellent years. I still think that 2018 has the juice, the nudge. I think that carries it over.
I mean, as someone that didn't like Red Dead Redemption 2, I feel like 2017 is it for me. It's a much better year.
It's funny because, I mean, like, at the end of the day, I'm a Nintendo guy. So it's like that gives me, like, not giving it to 2017 is crazy. But 2018 had God of War and Spider-Man. Like,
yes.
And Smash, me, right?
Those are the type of places. Yeah, but Smash is, I don't count it even. Like, Smash coming out that year, like, Smash Ultimate, I fucking love the game. But it's like, I don't credit, like, 2018 and Smash Ultimate. Like, that's just kind of like a...
Is it because it's like a living game? So it's like some of the biggest announcements for Banjo.
And it came
like
out in December.
Yeah.
Which I know doesn't necessarily like take away from it being a 2018.
This isn't your personal opinion about what fucking year the game came out. The game came out in 2018. It goes in the bucket of 2018 games.
I understand that, but that's to go back to my argument of like, they're just derivative sequels. It's just a derivative sequel. Like, I'm not going to like weigh that higher like as one of the like top five games we're talking about for 2018. Definitely my favorite.
We were just making the argument about GTA being like there having been better iterations on the same formula. I think Smash qualifies in that same logic.
Yeah, like I think it's the best, but I don't know. It didn't make 2018 special to me.
You're a weirdo. You're a giant weirdo, and I don't understand you.
I mean, and even then, like, okay, Smash Ultimate versus Breath of the Wild and Mario Odyssey. Like,
fair. That's fair. That's that argument I'll give you. Sure.
Arms. I remember like 2018's like in Game Informer when we did the Game of the Year conversation, it was by the time I called in because I was working on something else and called into the meeting, it was literally just God of War versus Red Dead Redemption 2. And I was like, I was in there prepared to fight for Monster Hunter World really hard. It's like, oh no, everyone ever cast by that. It's these two games for the discussion.
And I think that's the thing, is like that was the caliber of that year, and we joke around about it, but like how, you know, Spider-Man was so excited at DICE to win best graphics or whatever the hell they won because they finally won something. This game, Spider-Man, that any other year would have not had an all easy cakewalk, but like would have at least been number two, would have got the silver medal, instead is like fucking constantly playing bronze to Red Dead and God of War or Monster Hunter. You get involved in there, like, or Celeste.
Also,
yeah, I mean, it's so interesting. I feel like 17 and 18 in a lot of ways are a tie, because every single thing you just said, I feel like we can replace those game names with equals for the other year.
Because for 2017, I'm like, dude, we're forgetting about the amount of unique indie games that came out for Switch in that first year. Like, we're forgetting about Golf Story. We're forgetting about Snipper Clips.
Fuck off with Snipper Clips. You insult this conversation by bringing Snipper Clips into it.
Snipper Clips was excellent.
I'm a little shocked, Greg, that all this 2018 evangelizing you've been doing, you did not say Odyssey once.
I did in the original run, but I'm not crazy enough to sit here and tell you that it would have been Game of the Year over this. That's how
Sonic Mania.
The bench is so fucking deep. Tetris Effect, I can go grab. Obradin, I can go get. Florence, I can go get.
I'm just saying, Astrobot. Sonic Mania came out.
Astrobot. Remember that one? Excuse me. I'm sorry, Mr. Adeoye. Do you remember Astrobot? Do you remember that?
Sonic Mania, though, you know, came out in 2017. Also, Pyre.
You are high. You've been smoking stuff. I don't even know. The reefer over there. Tim, I just noticed your lights match your jacket. That's a brilliant move, and I appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you. Divinity Original Sin 2, not my cup of tea, but 2017 has that, Greg. What you going to do?
Shut the fuck up. Why? The Messenger, Valkyria Chronicles.
I was playing that with my girlfriend last night. I've never seen her get more irritated at a video game than that one time.
Yeah, I saw her tweet this morning about some boss or something that wasn't fun.
Yeah, there was a fight that was just, the enemy just keeps respawning as long as there's fire on the ground. And yeah. She got so mad, we reloaded back about an hour.
Wow. God. Okay. For a second, I thought you were talking about like an actual real life boss. Like, I thought she was fighting with somebody at her work. And I was like, oh, wow. Should we be talking about this on air?
2017, we got Resident Evil 7. We got Cuphead. We got Hellblade. We got Nier Automata.
I'm saying, like, when you're talking about Breath, Night in the Woods,
Breath of the Wild,
What Remains of Edith Finch?
Wolfenstein, New Colossus. You don't agree with me? Vote. Go ahead.
2018 had Dead Cells.
Yeah,
Dead Cells is fucking amazing.
Green, Moss
was good.
Yeah, Inside.
Hollow Knight was 2018.
Wait, Inside.
Yeah,
Inside was 2016.
Might have been a
port. I think.
Oh, the Switch port. Yeah. I'm looking at a thing of like games that scored higher than 90.
I still go 2017 personally because like 2017 has multiple Game of the Generation candidates for me. 2018 does have Monster Hunter and Spider-Man, which are the two games I love the most that year. But
did you not love God of War?
I thought it was fine. Oh, well. It made me a little motion sick, which is the main problem I had with it. But
sure.
I personally was not in love with it as much as everyone else was.
Fair.
All right. I'm just personally going to say they're a tie.
How dare you? For
the sake of the conversation now of bringing in 1998. It's so hard for me to not give it to 98.
No, that's time. Nostalgia talking.
No, but it's not though. Because we're talking about the best year. We're talking about like think of these games like and the reviews that they got at the time and deserved at the time of Ocarina of Time, Tekken 3, Half-Life, Metal Gear Solid, Resident Evil 2, Pokemon, Red and Blue. It's like that's
are we running off 2004?
We sure are. Shut up, Blessing.
I think I would not put 2004 in the same league as these. I think it's right behind. I don't know if you guys agree.
It's a semi. If I'm the only one that's thinking this way, then
it's fine. I like 2005 a little bit more, but yes. Oh God, I just realized how dumb this conversation sounds. Okay. I like 2005 a bit
more. Yeah, but yeah, Banjo-Kazooie, dude. Like, Crash Warped. Oddworld, there's so many freaking classic games that are legit good. Yes. Like they have the quality and like the generation defining elements to them.
For me, it's can you go to those series that still remain and go back to those original games and go like have an argument for those being the best games of the series? And if so, then I think that year stands up.
So it's kind of the opposite of the 1987 conversation.
Yes. Because I think there are people who would legitimately make the argument Ocarina of Time is the best Zelda game. There are people who
definitely say Tekken 3 is the best Tekken.
About that for MGS
those
as well.
People are absolutely wrong.
About well, Tekken 3? What
would you give it to?
Tekken 7.
Ah, yeah.
I Tekken guess. 7 is fucking perfect. It's incredible.
Tekken 3 got 10 out of 10s, man.
Video game reviewers just got to the point where like they don't want to give fighting games 10 out of 10s anymore. That's right, I said it.
Wow.
It was the last fighting game that got a 10 out of 10.
Smash, probably.
Probably, actually, you're probably right.
Half-Life, man. Pokemon, man. I don't know.
I will say, probably no one's good. There are a lot of people with nostalgia for Pokemon Red and Blue. I don't think anyone would go back and say they're the actual best games.
No way. I'm with you on that. But I also don't think... I think that Pokemon's probably the example out of all of these, Red and Blue specifically, that would drop the most in review score. Mm-hmm. When you look at the future of the series and like how it all kind of plays out. But I think that comparing 98 to 2017 and 18, I feel like there are more 10 out of 10 quality games in 98.
But you're saying there's more 10 out of 10s here, but yeah. Then I would ask though, but like, what about 9s out of 10s? I think
I think that as well. I mean, StarCraft also came out that year.
Yeah, sure, but I ain't no fucking Charles on yet nerd over here wanting to play that crap, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But a lot of people were, Greg.
I know, hey man. Whatever side of the argument benefits me and what I want to argue, that's what I pick for the moment, you know what I mean? I'm gone from being we should do this objectively to like, fuck no, I like God of War.
I love it. Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
Resident Evil 2, like, I think legitimately people will go back and say, even after the change... even after the remake, people might go and say Resident Evil 2 is the best in the series.
They're insane.
Yeah, but take control. Fuck off.
I understand that.
Hey, Pokemon Blue and Yellow came out in 98.
So here's the thing. Wikipedia is wrong. about the Pokemon release.
You could have just stopped early. You could have just said Wikipedia's wrong.
Yeah. Red and Blue came out in 98. Yellow came out in 99. I don't know why.
Okay.
Wrong. If you look at their individual Wikipedia pages, they have the right dates.
Gotcha. All right. I was confused because I was like, because I'm looking at a thing that said Yellow came out in 98. And so I was like, wait a second.
Yeah, it was a Japanese release. That's why they're listing it.
Gotcha. All right.
Yeah.
Symphony of the Night was 98. What the hell?
What do you say?
Yeah,
Symphony of the Night.
Castlevania Symphony of the Night. That's the other one. It's like we're talking 10, 10, 10, 10. It's insane.
Are we talking about US release specifically?
I think we are.
For all these games.
I think we're trying to, unless it fits our argument, then we're changing it.
Exactly.
If it benefits your argument, that's how you argue.
Yeah. All right, here's what we're going to do to definitively rank these. Kind of funny.
Symphony and I came out in 97 in both North America and Japan.
Shh. Wait, what?
Why? Yeah, Symphony and I was 97.
It's a staggered release, that's why.
It was a staggered release?
Saturn release. They released Saturn. Our part of the Saturn.
Oh, Saturn.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. So what we're going to do is each of us is going to rank the 3 years.
I like
98, 2017, and 2018. Do you guys have your answers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Greg's going to be so mad at me.
Damn right I am.
Okay. Imran, go.
I'm going to say 98, 17, 18.
I did the exact same thing.
You suck. You
bless.
17, 98, 18.
Greg.
18, 17, 98.
And there you go. 1998 is the greatest year in video game history. Thank you very much for joining us this week on the Kinda Funny Games cast. We are about to do the post show of the Gamescast for patreon.com/kindoffunnygames supporters, where I'm just going to click on some of the other years we didn't talk about and just see what's up with 1992. You'll have to support our Patreon to find out.